big race reaction, a new BHA chair, and Jockey Club restructuring. We have that and much, much more besides at the end of a busy news week on this week's Front Page. Hello and a warm welcome to the Front Page. I'm Jonathan Harding, and joining me to navigate the choppy waters of a very busy news week is Maddie Playle and Lee Mottershead via video link. We'll ease you in gently with a recap of the weekend's racing and some fantastic action at Ascot with the King George. Maddie, how impressed were you by Kalpana's victory?
I was really impressed. I agree with Colin Keane. He said beforehand he thought she'd need a career best to place, and she did put in an almighty career best, but she didn't place, she won. I would say, I think, lessons we can learn from the race. Maybe Calandagan's slightly past his peak now. Obviously, he had a really tough race at Epsom in the Coronation Cup where he was effectively pulled up. And then he did have to fight quite hard to win the Grand Prix de Saint-Cloud on his previous start. It was a magical run. But I just think the Calandagan of last year, you'd have expected him to run down Kalpana and go past her. Not sure she's improved as much as he's possibly regressed, if you know what I mean. Still a magnificent horse. I'm sure he's still got Group 1s in his locker, but that was sort of my main talking point. I think Benvenuto Cellini looks tailor-made for a Breeders' Cup turf, and Lamborn helped force a ferocious pace, stuck on in there to finish really nice fourth. He's got some staying entries. I think he could be, you know, obviously they've got Scandinavia, but if they want to go for some longer distance races with him, that door is very much open.
Yeah, loads of storylines coming out of that race. Do you agree, Lee, that Calandagan's possibly regressed a little bit? I know Graffar was talking about the space between the races, Saint-Cloud and Ascot, was shortened by a week. Did that have a big impact for you?
Maybe had an impact, but I think I'm probably a bit kinder than Maddie about Calandagan and where he is now. Graffar was very clear in saying the horse has not had a good season, in the sense that since Dubai, he had that run on the disaster that Graffar's talks about at Epsom, where he just hated the ground and finished tailed off. But it was then interesting talking about the Saint-Cloud race, where he said, and I thought maybe he was trying to make a point here, that he came from a long way behind in a heat wave, and he felt that had maybe left a mark on the horse. So I wouldn't be as convinced that the Calandagan of last year, still can't be the Calandagan of this year when we get to the back end of the year, and particularly the Japan Cup. I agree, like Maddie, that I thought it was a very encouraging run from Lamborn. So it was pretty depressing to see a Derby winner from last year at 100-1 in the betting for the King George on Saturday morning. To actually see him run a good race was very positive indeed. And in terms of the winner, Kalpana, I actually backed her for the race last year, but I thought she had a real chance. I couldn't see her winning it this year on her Hardwick form. But the key thing about Kalpana is she adores Ascot. And for that reason, I wouldn't be looking to back her for the Arc at this stage, because they're still saying that that British champion fillies and mares race on Champions Day is probably her biggest end of year target. And I suspect they will go for that over the Arc, knowing that the Arc can always be a race in which the draw can scupper you. But great to see a win, and in a storytelling sense, great to see Andrew Balding win the King George in the year that his father, Ian, sadly died. It was 55 years ago that Ian won the race with Mill Reeve, and it was 40 years ago that Prince Khaled Abdullah first won the Arc with Dancing Brave. Of course, Enable for the family have won the race three times since. So two really important families in the history of British horse racing, the Balding family and Prince Khaled's family. So really good to see them winning a top running of the King George. You know, the King George is back. He had a little period in the doldrums. It was 2 million quid this year. It's 2.5 million quid next year. Fair play to Ascot. Fair play to Levy Ball for supporting the race as well. So really, really positive King George on many levels.
The only thing I would say is it's just so sad. I was a Masquerade Ball fan. So sad to see him, you know, couldn't even beat Action, one of the pacemakers. And of course, Wurttemberg was effectively pulled up by Oisin Murphy. I think with Masquerade Ball, he just looked too keen in the early stages. Not sure what happened with the other horse, but it's a really big ask to ask these horses in Japan to come all the way to Britain. You know, we know he went via Alaska and Amsterdam Masquerade Ball and then got, you know, shuttled in a lorry an awful long way. And then to adapt to our tracks, you know, that's incredibly different to what they have in Japan. They're sort of ovals, they're very flat. And then to go to Ascot where, you know, the ground is totally different, the demands on the horse is totally different. I think maybe a combination of him being very keen and, again, it just being a really mammoth ass. So it's a shame that neither of those could really put their best foot forward. That's all I'd say.
Yeah, I'm sure when
that's a really actually important point. I'm being very positive, but there's been a concerted effort to boost, quite rightly concerted effort, to boost the big four British midsummer Group One races with a view to getting international horses in them. We saw last year that Dan and Dessar ran a rotten race in the international at York, and now you've got these two Japanese runners flopping. It would have been a big deal for Asker if those horses had run well. Württemberg was awash with sweat even before he was saddled, and as Maddie says, Masquerade Ball ran a stinker. So there was one negative to the King George, that was it.
No, absolutely, that's the negative. Positive, Safi Osborne had a fantastic day at Ascot, winning the international for Father Jamie, a treble. She just seems to be riding out of her skin at the moment.
She does. I think it's probably just confidence, isn't it? And when you have a good ride and a couple of good rides, you just keep getting better and better. I mean, I thank her for giving me a hand with Amazing Journey, who I was keen on. Horse that won at the track was having a penalty for that. And yeah, she's just really riding confidently. She's obviously got the support of her dad. He trained Hickory, who was her last winner as well. But she's also riding for a lot of other trainers. Jane Chappell-Heim was Primo Lara's trainer. She's also built up really good relationships with Ed Walker, Owen Burrows. Yeah, it's good when we have a season where Holly Doyle's obviously suffered a really horrible injury and she's out, that, you know, straight after a super sprint win, she can come to Ascot and really put her name in light, so to speak, especially given it was actually quite a, you know, an interesting day for her, given she lost the ride on Tulane in the Valiant Stakes as well. So that was very much a statement of intent that, you know, well, I'm here and I didn't do, you know, I didn't do anything wrong and I'm performing right at the top of my game. So yeah, great to see another female rider coming through and really riding at the top level.
Yeah, plenty to unpack from Ascot, but we must move on from a racing day to race courses. Lee, you've got all sorts in your latest column, which is available to read online and on the app. What can you tell us? We've got a new BHA chair, lots of movement at the Jockey Club.
So I'll just maybe canter through some of these points that were in the column, John. So first of all, started with the appointment of Simon Cox as BHA chair. We know it's been well reported that there were three candidates entering the closing stages: Peter Saville, Minette Batters, and now we know it was Simon Cox. We already knew that Peter Saville was out of the running. It was therefore down to Minette Batters and Simon Cox. Ultimately, the BHA Noms Committee went for commercial nous over political connections. Minette Batters, who is, you know, a successful business person in herself, but I think a primary attribute would have been political connections. Simon Cox has a rich history in the brewing industry, but also I can sort of have some personal knowledge of him. I'm on the Jumps Patent Committee, which he has chaired until now. I'm on the High Quality Horse Group with him, and he's really impressive. He's got this commercial background, he's a strategic thinker, but he also has a deep knowledge of horse racing, and I think he'd be particularly good at bringing various different stakeholders together. Now, that could be important going forward, because another point I made in the column is that it's at the end of this week, or during this week, that we're expecting the RCA governance review to be officially completed. Now, in all probability, the RCA members probably already know what's happening with that governance review, and I made the point in the piece that Simon Cox, one of his first big tasks might be to have to look at what happens next if the RCA implodes, which could happen. We already know that Ascot has walked away from the RCA. The Jockey Club and the large independents are waiting to see what the RCA proposes. Maybe they already know what the RCA has proposed. And if they're not satisfied with that, if they still feel, for example, that ARC is left with veto powers on certain key issues, I think they could well walk from the RCA. And if that happens, you have a massive situation for Simon Cox, because it's the RCA, not individual racecourses, that is the shareholder, a 50% shareholder in the BHA. And the other point I was making in the column was the Jockey Club, one of the players in this RCA situation, has been going through an upheaval of its own. Staff members have had it confirmed that there will likely be roughly 30 redundancies as part of Chief Executive Jim Mullen's plan to restructure the Jockey Club. Central to that will be sort of a back to the future situation, whereby the Jockey Club, like British governance systems, has tended to go from one system to another, drop it and then return to it. Well, they're now returning to a regional hub system. There'll be five regional hubs. One of those will be one that wraps up a massive one, Newmarket and Lambourne. So it'll include the two racecourses in Newmarket, but also the National Stud, the Newmarket and Lambourne Training Centre. So a huge job there for Sophie Abel. But the really disappointing aspect of this is that Jim Allen, who has been running Epsom as general manager 1 year into the Derby's five-year revival plan, he will leave the organisation later this year. The London Hub, newly created London Hub, will include Epsom, Kempton and Sandown. And one person needs to have overall responsibility for all those. Jim decided that that wasn't a job he wanted to go for. Amy Starkey, who is excellent, is taking on that brief, but it's still regrettable that there's been so many changes in position at Epsom as general manager. People have tended to leave to go for other jobs. On this occasion, someone is leaving because of the Jockey Club's own actions. So big stuff going on at the Jockey Club. For staff there who've been there for a long time, this is just the latest in a long line of restructures, and they're hoping after this, I'm sure, for a long period of much needed stability.
Yeah, Maddie, an awful lot to unpack there. There's never a dull day in our job.
No.
But we'll just start with Epsom in particular. We had this exciting vision for what was going to be done to revitalise the track, return it to its former glory, a five-year plan, and here we are, and there's going to be a new person in charge of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's not to say that they can't do a great job, but I spoke to Jim Allen quite a few times. I live in Epsom and had quite a bit to do with the sort of coverage of the re-sort of invigorated Derby this year. He seemed to really enjoy his role. He seemed to have some great ideas, seemed to be incredibly passionate. And I just think it's a bit of a shame to see instability at such a key time when such big sums of money are being spent and key decisions are being made on how to improve the race. But hopefully it can go by as seamlessly as possible, because the Derby needs to return to its former glories. And I think as much as they were so unlucky with the weather this year, there were some really promising signs.
Yeah, and Lee, we'd touch on that instability in the Jockey Club with the RCA, racecourses generally, the knock-on effect for the sport. Just speak to the impact that this has, this sort of movement.
Within the RCA?
Yeah, within the RCA.
Yeah, so, I mean, the problem within the RCA is that you have racecourses with completely different business models. So what works financially, commercially, for a track like Ascot, where we were on Saturday, is completely different to what works for a racecourse like Linkfield or Southwell or even Kempton within the Jockey Club, to be fair. So trying to find a system whereby what the RCA decides that satisfies everybody has so far proved pretty much impossible. They have a one-member, one-vote system. And for the large racecourses, Ascot's view and the view of a Goodwood or a York would be that their one vote being commensurate with a one vote for, say, a Ripon or a Taunton or a Wolverhampton just doesn't seem right. So trying to find a system that satisfies them all has been the job of the RCA across this month. They've tried to come up with a system that they can say to their members, look, this will work better for all of you. But that is a big, big ask. I don't think we're going to hear anything during Glorious Goodwood. Generally speaking, racecourses don't like to kibosh other racecourses' big events. So I'd be very surprised if we hear anything during Glorious Goodwood. But at some point thereafter, we'll find out what the RCA has proposed. And crucially, we'll find out what its members have decided. And I say, if they do decide, if the Jockey Club and the large indies, the remaining large indies, decide that they're not happy and they walk from the Racecourse Association, then that represents implosion for the RCA, for the British racecourse sector, but also for the British racing's governance structure. And immediately, Simon Cox and the BHA board would have to try and find a way of creating a system that successfully represents Britain's racecourses, who at the minute through the RCA are a 50% shareholder in the BHA.
And so that will be one of many headaches, no doubt, for Simon Cox. What's your take on, firstly, his appointment, and secondly, some of those pressing issues that he'll have to very quickly address?
Yeah, well, I don't know him personally. I'm not familiar with him at all, so I can't speak with as much experience as Lee. But, you know, it's in the public knowledge that he has been a long-time member of the TBA board. He's been a PGA board member previously. He's on the High Quality Horse Group, etc. He's an established breeder and owner. He's also got shares in Logician, I believe, the former St. Ledger winner. And he seems, you know, like perfectly suited to the role. And it's a role that is a bit of a poison chalice and no one really wants it. So I guess you have to give credit where it's due. The only thing I would say is from murmurings that I've heard and, as you say, the mounting issues that British racing has, I question, but other people seem to be questioning whether he'll be enough of a disruptor and willing to ruffle feathers and create sort of meaningful change. Because I think to do that, yes, it's going to be a really challenging and difficult job, but there's an element of it needs to happen now. You know, racing's at a really pivotal time with all of these issues, you know, affordability checks, foal crops declining, etc. We could sit here all day and talk about them. So, yes, I wonder if he's going to really be able to shake up British racing as much as it needs to be shaken up, if that makes sense. But I wish him all the best, and he clearly understands the sport very well. So, it'll be interesting to see how he navigates the next few months.
And Lee, just how important is that knowledge of the sport? Because obviously Peter Saville had his fans within the industry, and part of the reason he was a popular choice is because he's sort of been there and done it and understands the industry. Simon Cox ticks that box crucially. How important do you think that will be?
I think it's hugely important. I think if only for confidence as well of the stakeholders, participants and race courses, I think we do need someone that understands the sport. I think the two things that the sport in general was asking for was someone who had proper commercial knowledge and someone who had skin in the game. Well, Simon Cox has both. Now, Peter Saville has both as well. Ultimately, the nominations committee has decided to go with Simon Cox over Peter Saville, who was taken out of the process a fair time ago relative to obviously to the winner. I think maybe Peter Saville's problem was always going to be, would he get enough support across the industry? He's someone who I think, but even his supporters would say, he is sometimes at the centre of argument. He's not loved by everybody. Now, that's not necessarily a bad thing. You don't want leaders to be all warm and cuddly all the time. But I think Simon Cox is someone who at the minute has support from across all sectors of the sport. He wouldn't have any enemies in the sport. He'd have a lot of goodwill towards him. And I suspect as well that if you've been in business for as long as he has, that you do have to be prepared to make tough decision. So whilst I don't think Simon Cox would say he is a disruptor, I think he will be perfectly prepared to make hard decisions. I think he'd be prepared to upset people, but I also think he's probably very well placed to bring people together. And when you have a situation where the sport needs to be going to government on a number of fronts with one voice, I think being able to bring people together and to be able to look like you've brought people together is quite an important thing.
No, absolutely. And fingers crossed he's able to do that. We have so much to get through, so we'll just jump into the next subject. Maddie, a rather concerning story from last week about Diva Racing, allegations of them, the syndicate, not paying their training fees, not paying out winnings to syndicate members, overselling shares. The sums that are sort of being mentioned are very large. We don't obviously haven't heard from Ryan Tongue, who runs Diva Racing, so it's all allegations at this stage. But just speak to a general point here. You know, how much of an impact will this have in terms of people's perception of syndicates?
Yeah, I mean, syndicates are hugely popular, and obviously they're great because they give the sort of ordinary person a way into horse ownership. I was reading in one of our recent pieces that it's estimated there are over 3,000 syndicates in Britain, so that just says that. Regarding Diva Racing, I really enjoyed following Imperial Emperor's story. He obviously ran in the Dubai World Cup for them. He was a fantastic horse, and it seemed like it was a really wonderful thing and a wonderful way for people to own a horse, and to own a horse of that caliber, you know, that opportunity just doesn't come around very often. So I'm very saddened by it. And I know the ROA have spoken about how they think there should be more robust protections for syndicates. I think that's very fair. You know, it's okay if, you know, the majority of syndicates are performing brilliantly and there's, you know, no malpractice going on, but it only takes sort of one bad egg, and in this case that might be the reality, to sort of taint the name of syndicates, the majority of whom do a very, very good job. It's just a very messy situation, isn't it? It's a very sad situation, and yeah, hopefully for the syndicate members and for all involved, it can be resolved as soon as possible.
Yes, hopefully. Lee, it is a messy situation. The BHA has barred Diva Racing from having runners in Britain. What's your take on what you've read over the last week or so?
Well, I mean, like Maddie, I think it's incredibly sad. I think for anyone who has been involved in that syndicate, it's a hell of a kick in the teeth. And, you know, Ryan Tong hasn't responded to queries so far. You know, the email that was sent to him responded by an automatic generated email that said he is currently ill, been receiving treatment for ill health. Obviously, anyone would wish anybody well in that regard. But if it is the case that shares in horses have been oversold, so 120%, 130% instead of 100%, if it is the case that syndicate members haven't been paid money that they are owed, if it's the case that trainers haven't been paid money they're owed, if it's the case the horses that belong to syndicate members have been entered in sales without those members being aware of that happening, without their giving their approval, then none of that is satisfactory. All of that is disgraceful, and the BHA is right to have put a stop to Diva making entries for horses. And if all those accusations are proved to have been true, then serious action needs to be taken against perpetrators, and that action, one would imagine, would be at a level way beyond anything that racing can do. It would be something for higher authorities.
No, absolutely, a story that will develop in the coming days and weeks, I'm sure. Maddie, speaking to what racing can do, the BHA has brought in licensing to try and offer a little bit more security around syndicates. But is there a sense that perhaps the regulation of syndicates and racing clubs is ever so slightly lagging behind their popularity and the number of people involved, and indeed the sums of money involved?
Yeah, I think that's possibly the case. You know, there's always going to be an element of doing your due diligence when you want to enter into any sort of payment plan or syndicate like that. But at the same time, can British Racing saying, yes, we're absolutely doing enough to protect people? I'm not quite sure. You know, it's really tricky situation in this case with Diva Racing. But I think it's very fair on, yeah, like I said before, people like the ROA to sort of say that it's time for more robust practices.
No, absolutely. Transparency, as ever, key to this. And we've also got greater clarity, pivoting to another racecourse topic. Chelmsford will be saved, essentially, by Arena Racing Company stepping in to get racing back there. Lee, major development, good news for participants and the end of what has been, to put it very mildly, a turbulent period for that track.
Yeah, there have been a lot of turbulent periods for Chelmsford or Great Lees, as it previously was known. To precede this story, John, back in March, the parent company, like, went into administration at Chelmsford. It was subsequently revealed that among the huge debts were £3.6 million to its media rights provider, SIS. The BHA has consistently been refusing to grant an appeal to the company, Golden Mile Racing Limited, that wanted to restart racing at Chelmsford. The BHA had lost confidence in the promises made by Golden Mile Racing Limited. And in particular, the BHA has felt, I believe, that it didn't want Chelmsford to be allowed to race if its founder, John Holmes, had anything to do with racing at that track. Now, the fact ARC has come along and looks to be agreeing a deal to stage racing at Chelmsford would suggest that John Hines will not have any involvement in racing at the track he founded. For participants, as you say, it's great news because whilst I don't think anyone would say that Chelmsford is an amazing track for racing loving racegoers in that it hasn't got a proper grandstand, you can't really see the much of the action with the naked eye. For participants, they love it. It's a very good and fair track. It's a big win for ARC. Their business is to a large extent built around having fixtures. This gives them more fixtures. Perhaps disappointing for the Jockey Club because all the signals have been that they were looking into Chelmsford as well. They admit they'd looked into it. And for ARC to get the deal over the Jockey Club, well, some people will say that raises eyebrows, and it's perhaps surprising. But yeah, so a happy outcome on many levels that Chelmsford comes back. It will have a number of knock-on effects, not least in terms of what happens if and when Kempton disappears. Obviously, we'll hope Kempton continue, or most of us hope Kempton continues into the long term. But if it doesn't, there'd been a sense that Chelmsford could provide the Jockey Club with an alternative home for the all-weather fixtures currently staged at Kempton. That clearly won't happen now. So, yeah, I think in all regards, in most regards, this has to be a good news story, and I'm sure lots of people will be very keen to see Chelmsford resume fixtures whenever the BHA gives it the green light.
No, absolutely. That was just one of several racecourse-related stories that broke in the last week. We'll now move on to something that happened on the racecourse, Maddie Ross Orion, 28-day ban at Sandown. You covered this story. What can you tell us?
Yeah, so his ride, I think it was about 14-1 shot Thunder Home, was well clear in the final furlong. And Jamie Spencer on his horse for John and Thady Gosden was held up. Rosser, thinking that he'd got the race won on this horse, who had a big advantage at the furlong pole, clearly wasn't aware that Jamie was thundering home, ironically, on his mount. Rosser very momentarily eased up in the shadows of the post and just missed out in a photo finish. He was subsequently deemed to have not given his horse the best possible chance and therefore was banned for 28 days. Now, he was already due to miss the start of Glorious Goodwood due to a whip ban he received at York a few weeks ago aboard Table Talk. So he, as we speak now, was in the process of mounting a challenge in the Jockeys' Championship, is going to find that tremendously difficult, missing both Glorious Goodwood and this new ban. Would rule him out of the entirety of the Ebor meeting as well. He is appealing it, we should say that. I'm not quite sure how effective he will be in totally quashing the ban. Perhaps he'll be able to shave a few days off. But yeah, the commentary around this has been very interesting. We've had David Jennings saying that he deserved, you know, every one of the days that he got, and that there needs to be a bigger deterrent against this sort of thing because it does happen. And then I read with interest Peter Thomas's take on it, and that was that mistakes happen. You know, in football, defenders know where they should be, but that doesn't stop them from being in the wrong place at the wrong time. And no amount of ban will ever deter jockeys from just making simple human mistakes. So I found both those pieces very interesting. I think it's right that he receives a ban. You know, ultimately, he did not do the optimum to obtain his best possible placing. And you could argue if he would have ridden out and not momentarily eased up, some people could argue that Jamie's horse would have won anyway. But did Rosser put in that maximum effort? Well, no, he didn't. And I'm sure he'd be the first to hold his hands up and say, I made a mistake. It's sad for him because obviously he's a tremendously talented guy. And this is going to be, you know, a real blow for him at a key point in the season when he was hoping to launch an attack on the championship. I do think he, you know, there needs to be repercussions for jockeys in these scenarios. Whether 28 days is fair, I'm not sure. I think I'd be leaning more to agreeing with DJ, to be honest. You know, I mentioned the price of the horse, but it doesn't matter really. You know, if you're a punter and you've invested in this horse's performance, you're feeling incredibly hard done by. So yeah, I feel for Ross and I feel for connections. Clearly a very frustrating thing, but it does happen in racing. as Pete touched upon, and it's just how we deal with these things and look forward. But Lee, what do you think? Do you think the 28 days was fair?
I think it's a really, really difficult one, and I don't want to sit on the fence on this one, but I can see the points of view expressed by both DJ and Peter Thomas. The problem is that for punters, there isn't really much more, anything much more frustrating than seeing a horse that you have backed that should have won a race, not winning a race because a jockey has eased up just before the line. And although Ross Orion did that for only a fleeting second, I think watching the race through on Sandown or on TV, I think it's hard to argue those wouldn't have won had Ross Orion not done that. Now, Ross Orion looks like he's going to appeal, and it'll be interesting to see what arguments he puts forward in his defence. And I also, I can also see the argument that it is a mistake, and we all make mistakes. But ultimately, a lot of regulation in racing and in sport more generally concerns people who are making genuine, honest mistakes. And in sport, genuine, honest mistakes are often heavily punished. And therefore, I think, you know, if Ross Orion is guilty of what it looks like he's guilty of here, then yeah, you have to take a meaty ban.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, racing can't afford to go easy on people just because we're assuming it's an innocent mistake. You know, they're not all necessarily going to be innocent mistakes, so they have to be treated, you know, the same.
There we have it. Tough for Ross Orion, who'll be missing some key weeks of the season. It would be remiss of us, filming the day before Glorious Goodwood, not to touch on that festival and also Galway running alongside. It's a fantastic week of the year. Maddie, who are you most looking forward to then this week?
Oh, it's tough, isn't it? I think the two big ones, it has to be the Sussex Stakes. We're going to see Bo Echo hopefully extend his unbeaten record. We've got round three, I think it is, for him, between him and Stard, and older horses in the mix for the first time. I fancy a horse at a huge price that I think might run quite well in the Sussex, but I'll keep that to myself
you
for
can't
now.
You can't do that, surely.
Well, okay, fine. I think Seagulls 11 could run huge. He's about 50 to 1, but he loves the track. We know that that's really important at Goodwood, where there can be hard luck stories. He is not of the class of Bo Echo and co, but I think could go forward. Positioning at Goodwood is key. I think he could run a career best anyway. We've got him and the older horses in the mix for the first time, and then we will hopefully have a replay of that magnificent Ascot Gold Cup between Scandinavia and Trawlerman. Be great if they could just reproduce those runs and that level of form, we would be in for an absolute cracker.
No, absolutely. And Lee, you'll be down there all week, most of the week?
All out the 5 days. On Thursday, I'm off to the funeral of a regular former Racing First contributor, Sean McGee. But aside from that, I'm at Goodwood, looking forward to it as well. Actually, Maddie's point about Seagulls 11 is interesting, because I just know we've had the declaration through this morning. Ashim Murphy is riding Seagulls 11, who you can back at about 6 to 1. Maddie will know better than I do. She's probably got a huge price.
But I haven't backed him yet, so I need to hurry up.
Well, Never So Brave, who's also in the race, and Ashim Murphy normally rides, is ridden by PJ McDonald and is a shorter price. So I don't quite know what's happened there, whether Ashim has decided he would rather ride Seagulls 11.
Do you know, that's interesting.
Dispensation. Yeah, it is interesting.
Because I was working last week at Ascot doing a preview for the King George, and Graham Cunningham was suggesting in one of the handicaps at Ascot on Saturday, Ashim got off one of Andrew Boulding's horses to ride for the Kooblers. So maybe he's been given a bit more freedom in his role for the Bouldings, or maybe something's happened there. But it seems that he's entitled to take outside rides, maybe more so than it was previously the case anyway. That is interesting, Lee.
It is, particularly to say Never So Brave is a shorter price. And at 40 to 1, he might be quite interesting too. But I think it's a stacked Sussex Stakes. We've heard this morning that Lake Forest, the connections, their aspiration is to run him in the Lennox Stakes on Tuesday and then the Sussex Stakes on Wednesday.
Love it.
Which would be a bold old plan. But I think what's really interesting for me about the Sussex is that the big three, if you like, Bo Echo, Stard and Opera Ballo, I think they're all going to be so well suited by Goodwood. I think it's an ideal track for all three horses. But at the moment, we've got 12 runners, even with defections, you still hope to have 10 or 11. And in those circumstances, in a such a tactical race, you could see a bit of argy-bargy. So as ever, it's going to be fascinating to see how the Sussex Stakes plays out. Stade is drawn one on the fence under Ryan Moore. There are two Ballydore horses in there with him. I think Boecho is probably the most talented horse in the race. But say for me, what's really interesting is I think Goodwood is ideal for the big three.
No, it promises to be a fantastic week at Goodwood. As always, be sure to follow along racingpost.com for all the previews, tipping, reporting, you name it, we've got it. So you can follow all the action with us throughout the week. I'm afraid to say that's all we have time for today. Jam-packed show, lots to go at. So my thanks to Maddie and Lee for guiding us through that so expertly. My thanks to you for listening and watching along. And be sure to tune in again to the Front Page next week.